I've rarely met a girl who's such a potent argument in favor of international relations.
How strange. I'd close my eyes and I dream of something quite astonishingly different.
And all my days are trances, and all my nightly dreams are where thy dark eye glances.
The second Def Leppard reference in 2 days.
It's a sign.
Oh, magical thinking signs?
Yes. What does it mean?
What does Def Leppard mean?
What does it mean?
What does it mean?
That the 80s are going to come back to haunt us?
Well, I was at the Forever 21 today.
Ooh.
And let me tell you, the 90s are coming back to haunt us.
Yes.
Yes.
Josh came home at lunch and then changed into a jacket. It was cold. And he came out of the bathroom and he says, I'm like a 90s fashion icon. And I was all, okay, ooh. Are you good with that?
Is that what you wanted?
And then he took the jacket off and left. So that was my answer.
What show are we on, Kimmy?
Oh my gosh, is it 48?
It is.
48.
Oh.
Another sign.
Because that's how old you're going to be this year.
Oh, yes.
Oh, sorry.
Well, I was thinking, you know, 4 is half of 8.
8, right.
Right?
So magical.
8 is twice as many as 4.
Yes.
Magic.
Math.
They're both even numbers. They're both numbers.
So I want to tell a little story, and then we'll talk about what we're this episode is about.
Okay. Did you write the story down?
Or no, just I'm going to just tell it because as I was doing the research for this, I remembered that I would do this as a child, and it illustrates perfectly what we're going to be talking about tonight. So when I was in the summer before I started kindergarten,
okay,
I had just turned 5. Mm-hmm. I turned 5 in June. I went to summer school and then kindergarten started. I was a very sort of nervous, sensitive child, you know.
Aww.
And somehow in my mind, I thought that if I didn't cry every day, the bus wouldn't come and take me home.
Mm-hmm.
So every single day, whether I felt sad or not, I would make myself cry because I was convinced that if I didn't do that, there was no way I was going to get home. And one day I didn't cry. I got caught up in the fun of whatever was happening. And a different bus driver came.
Oh.
And he went the opposite way on the route. Normally on the route, I was dropped
scary.
Off first.
Oh my gosh, terrifying.
So that experience solidified my weird thinking about it,
mm-hmm.
You know, even though it was just a coincidence,
right?
In my 5-year-old brain, it was the cause that right. I had forgotten to cry that day. Mm-hmm. And I can remember the adults around me saying, what's wrong? Are you okay? Is something hurting you? And every day before the end of the day, I would cry.
Aww.
So I had decided that my thoughts were controlling my environment.
Mm-hmm.
And when I got older, I could not understand why I did that, why I thought something was really wrong with me. But it was just magical thinking.
Magical thinking. Normal part of childhood.
Right. Right. So that's what we're going to talk about today. And I feel like we were drunk when we decided that we were going to do magical thinking.
Not drunk. We were
buzzed.
buzzed, loopy.
Heavily.
Yeah, it was fun.
We were talking about Trump supporters.
Yes.
And so we were wondering, like, why they keep believing the things that they believe. And we were talking about magical thinking. So we decided to go into a little more depth about it. So what did you find out? Well, actually, you already knew a lot about this.
Well, a little bit. Upon research, I discovered there's a lot more to learn. Oh, I didn't realize that I knew about the childhood part of it, you know, that it's a normal part of childhood. It precedes concrete operations. So that's when kids understand that there's more logic in the world and that, you know, there's cause and effect that can be measured, so to speak. So I knew that part of it, but there's also magical thinking in relation to OCD disorders.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought that was pretty interesting.
Mm-hmm.
I'd never really thought of it that way.
Yeah.
So, and then I did some research into politics, philosophy, and religion.
Religion,
in
yeah.
relation to magical thinking
mm-hmm.
in adults. Oh, adults.
Should we take a break right here and then come back and talk about adults who believe things that aren't true?
Sure.
Okay.
Magical friends.
Hello.
So magical thinking in societies and communities and large groups of people has happened throughout time, and it kind of ebbs and flows. I didn't dig into that too much because it was a lot.
It's like, a lot there.
Throughout time. I mean, if you look at the different periods of philosophical thinking, that's really interesting, you know, the classical period into the Roman period and, you know.
Freud and all them.
Yeah. So you just kind of keep going and it kind of swings back and forth from science to religion.
Right.
But I will start with an article that I found written by it was in The Economist in 2016.
Mm-hmm. What month in 2016?
September.
Oh.
Mm-hmm.
Right before.
That's right.
When we still had our heads about us.
And the author, I printed this out and I don't have the author, but it was, in The Economist, September 2016. The article is titled Art of the Lie, subtitle, Politicians Have Always Lied. Does it matter if they leave the truth behind entirely? Post-truth politics. Dun, dun, dun. Consider how far Donald Trump is estranged from fact. He inhabits a fantastical realm. Ziggy. Hi, Ziggy. Where Barack Obama's birth certificate was faked, the president founded the Islamic State, the Clintons are killers, and the father of a rival was with Lee Harvey Oswald before he shot John F. Kennedy. Oh my. Mr. Trump is leading the exponent of post-truth politics, a reliance on assertions that feel true but have no basis in fact. His brazenness is not punished but taken as evidence of his willingness to stand up to elite power. And he is not alone. Members of Poland's government assert that the previous president, who died in a plane crash, was assassinated by Russia. Turkish politicians claim the perpetrators of the recent bungled coup were acting on orders issued by the CIA. The successful campaign for Britain to leave the European Union warned of the hordes of immigrants that would result from Turkey's imminent ascension to the Union. If, like this newspaper, you believe that politics should be based on evidence, this is worrying. Strong democracies can draw on an inbuilt defenses against post-truth. Authoritarian countries are more vulnerable. Lord of the lies. That politicians sometimes peddle lies is not news. Think of Ronald Reagan's fib that his administration had not traded weapons with Iran in order to secure the release of hostages and to fund the efforts of rebels in Nicaragua. Dictators and Democrats seeking to deflect blame for their own incompetence have always manipulated the truth. Sore losers have always accused the other lot of lying. But post-truth politics is more than just an invention of wingering elites. I don't know that word. I hope I was saying it right. Wingling elites who have been outflanked. The term picks out the heart of what is new. The truth is not falsified or contested, but of secondary importance. Once the purpose of political lying was to create a false view of the world. The lies of men like Mr. Trump do not work like that. They are not intended to convince the elites, whom their target voters neither trust nor like, but to reinforce prejudices. Feelings, not facts, are what matter in this sort of campaigning. Their opponents' disbelief validates the us versus them mindset that outsider candidates thrive on. And if your opponents focus on trying to show your facts are wrong, they have to fight on the ground you have chosen. The more Remain campaigners attacked the Leave campaign's exaggerated claim that the EU membership cost Britain 350 million euros a week, the longer they kept the magnitude of those costs, in the spotlight, post-truth politics has many parents. Some are noble. The questioning of institutions and received wisdoms is a democratic virtue. A skeptical lack of deference toward leaders is the first step to reform. The collapse of communism was hastened because brave people were prepared to challenge the official propaganda. But coercive forces are also at play. One is anger. Many voters feel let down and left behind, while the elites who are in charge have thrived. They are scornful of the self-serving technocrats who said that the euro would improve their lives and that Saddam Hussein had weapons of mass destruction. Popular trust in expert opinion and established institutions has tumbled across Western democracies. Post-truth also has been abetted by the evolution of the media. The fragmentation of news sources has created an atomized world in which lies, rumor, and gossip spread with alarming speed. Lies that are widely shared online within a network whose members trust each other more than they trust any mainstream media source can quickly take on the appearance of truth. Presented with evidence that contradicts a belief that is dearly held, people have a tendency to ditch the facts. Well-intentioned journalistic practices bear blame too. The pursuit of fairness in reporting often creates phony balance at the expense of truth.
This is what I've been saying.
Go ahead.
NASA scientist says Mars is probably uninhabited. Professor Snooks says it's teeming with aliens. It's really a matter of opinion. When politics is like pro wrestling, society pays the cost. Mr. Trump's insistence that Mr. Obama founded ISIS precludes a serious debate over how to deal with violent extremists. Policy is complicated, yet post-truth politics damns complexity as the sleight of hand experts use to bamboozle everyone else. Hence, Hillary Clinton's proposals on paid parental leave go unexamined, and the case for trade liberalization is drowned out by common sense demands for protection. It is tempting to think when policies sold on dodgy prospectuses start to fail, lied-to supporters might see the error of their ways. The worst part of post-truth politics, though, is that the self-correction cannot be relied on. When lies make the political system dysfunctional, its poor results can feed the alienation and lack of trust in institutions that make the pro-truth play possible, the post-truth play possible in the first place. Pro-truthers, stand and be counted. To counter this, mainstream politicians need to find a language of rebuttal. Being called pro-truth might be a start. Humility and the acknowledgement of past hubris would help. The truth has powerful forces on its side. Any politician who makes contradictory promises to different audiences will soon be exposed on Facebook or YouTube. If an official lies about attending a particular meeting or seeking a campaign donation, a trail of emails may catch him out. Democracies have institutions to help, too. Independent legal systems have mechanisms to establish truth. Indeed, Melania Trump has turned to the law to seek redress for the lies about her past. So, in their way, do the independent bodies created to inform policy, especially those that draw on science. If Mr. Trump loses in November, post-truth will seem less menacing, though he has been too successful for it to go away. The deeper worry is for countries like Russia and Turkey, where autocrats use techniques of post-truth to silence opponents. Cast adrift on an ocean of lies, the people there will have nothing to cling to. For them, the novelty of post-truth may lead back to old-fashioned oppression.
Ouch.
I know, right?
Knowing that that was September 2016?
Yeah.
Oh, God.
Yeah, it was like, I mean, it was, no, it.
It all came to pass.
People knew what was going on. They were paying attention back then.
So magical thinking is a belief that one's ideas, thoughts, wishes, prayers can influence the course of events in the physical world. And scientists call it magic ideation.
Ooh.
Yeah. So I looked at magical thinking in mental illnesses.
Okay.
Because that's something that happens in my family. And I have a little bit of firsthand experience with it. So you had mentioned OCD, and that is the big one. Because the people that have OCDs believe that their rituals can control the environment. Mm-hmm. And can ward off bad things happening. Like I in my story about preschool... I thought that if I didn't cry every day, the bus wouldn't come. It's the same sort of thing, like somebody turning on and off the light 16 times or so-and-so's going to die. So it's that same idea. It happens in schizophrenia spectrum disorders, which my daughter has, the schizoaffective bipolar type. So magical thinking props up their harmful behaviors stemming from distrust of people and institutions, etc., the government, yada. So they'll believe in conspiracies a lot, believe that they're psychic, that they can read your mind. They're very superstitious and paranoid. But that the magical thinking as it relates to schizophrenia is a little more dangerous. They can become violent, thinking that, you know, every black car that passes down the street,
right, yeah,
you know, they might try and do something. So there's a fine line between magical thinking and psychosis, but it's pretty close in mental illness.
Wow.
It also shows up in general anxiety disorder.
Believing
that your anxiety controls the world around you.
I can identify with
that. I know. When I wrote that down, I thought of you.
Thanks.
Well, listen to this part. The belief that your anxiety protects you. For example, germaphobes thinking that they'll get sick if they're not a germaphobe. Or thinking that if you're not worried about something, that a bad thing is going to happen.
Right. If I don't explore every
the possible. Worst possible.
Yep.
So also believing, if you think that something good is going to happen, then you're cursing it, you're jinxing it. So yep. My family's going to go on vacation and I'm not going to worry about it. It's going to be a great time. And then mm-hmm. if something bad happens, you're going to think that it's your fault. And that is also part of any kind of the anxiety disorders. Mm-hmm. In depression, there's a personalization of negative effects. Everything is bad. It's my fault. The universe is out to get me. Mm-hmm. Why does everything bad happen to me? And so anything, there's a focus on the bad things and believing that you're cursed and that only okay. bad things happen to you.
Okay.
So that's part of the depression part of it. A lot of this stems from the dopamine that floods your brain. And in a schizophrenic person, they have a lot of dopamine. And it allows them to be creative and imaginative. Also, very, very high levels of magical thinking. But in a depressed person, there's just a trickle of dopamine.
Huh.
So what they have found is, and this is one of the good parts about having some magical thinking, is that people who have this magical thinking more than others are mm-hmm. actually can experience pleasure more, which might explain why people who are bipolar actually love being manic.
Right, because it feels good.
It feels really good.
Yeah, really, really good.
And people who are depressed don't feel pleasure very much. It's because their brains are like, eh. And people have done studies where they find that people who are very, very logical, their imagination isn't as vivid. They don't respond well to stimulus. They're not as sexual. They're not, you know. So there could be a chemical component to both mental illness, but also this magical thinking part of it. I was fascinated. When I set out to do this, I thought that really only the disorders that have sort of psychosis
mm-hmm.
would be related to magical thinking. I didn't even think about depression and anxiety.
Yeah, I didn't either. That's really interesting.
OCD makes a lot of sense.
Yeah.
Yeah, because your whole world is around, you know, trying to control
rituals and
all yeah. that. Yeah. So magical thinking is a defense mechanism to protect people from feeling helpless.
Mm-hmm.
And
yes.
Mm-hmm.
A little control.
In the case of a mental illness, it can, if you notice someone or if you notice yourself participating more in that sort of thing, that could mean that mm-hmm. the mental illness is resurfacing, that your symptoms are getting worse.
Ramping
so
up.
It can be actually a thing to look out for. I was shocked that they say that in some cases it can be good, you know. You can actually just be depressed all the time if you don't have any magical thinking.
If the magical thinking is gone.
Yeah.
That is really interesting.
So that's what I have to offer today.
Wow. So that's a whole different dimension. Like, it kind of explains some things that I learned about society and institutions
mm-hmm.
and people.
What did you learn?
And how they work together. All kinds of things. I had big thoughts today. Ziggy.
Ziggy, no biting.
You can have big thoughts too, Ziggy.
He hates philosophy.
Okay. So the first thing that popped into my mind was the children's fable, The Emperor's New Clothes.
Oh.
So that kind of illustrates magical thinking in a group of people mm-hmm. at large. And for our listeners who aren't familiar with that story, and I'm going to guess everybody is, these three swindlers show up and they're like, oh, you need a new suit of clothes, Emperor. We can make you a suit that will make you invisible. And he's like, ooh, that sounds fabulous. And so, you know, they start to weave the cloth and they're going through all of the motions, but everything's invisible, right?
Right.
So they're weaving with invisible thread and they're sewing and everything's invisible and they keep asking for more money. Oh, we need more money. We need more money because this is so expensive and blah, 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 blah. And the emperor's thrilled. He's so excited. And then they finish the suit and they put it on him and they're doing their tailoring thing and they're fixing him. And it's all a ruse, obviously. But the emperor believes them. And then he goes out in the procession with his suit on, which is invisible, which is supposed to make him invisible, right? But he's naked. And he's parading through town naked, and he's so proud of himself, and all the villagers are pretending like, oh, that his suit is so wonderful, it looks so beautiful, it fits him so nicely, and oh, blah, 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 until a child speaks up and says, he's not wearing any clothes. And at which point the emperor hears the child, kind of realizes that, oh, I guess, yeah, okay, I'm naked. But he keeps up the ruse and continues to parade through town to save face.
Right.
So the moral of that story has to do with pride and admitting one has been duped or wrong.
Right.
So that was the first thing that popped into my head. And children's stories usually tell the truth, you know, mm-hmm. in a really simple way. That's
right.
kind of their job, to make a concept plain and easy to understand. Mm-hmm. So we see magical thinking throughout history, and it's, you know, it ebbs and flows. So when you look at the timeline of philosophies, you can kind of see, you know, there's the classical period, and then there's the Roman period and the Hellenistic period.
Tick, tick. Tick, tick.
And then you get into the medieval and then the Renaissance and then the Age of Reason. And then, so it's interesting that it does that, you know, with society at large. It's almost like, okay, we can't handle the truth anymore.
We've got to swing back the other
way. It's too much because a lot of times it is too much.
Right.
So as with a person who has depression, and they're not able to think magically, they're depressed.
Right.
It doesn't feel good. Right? Then you go to the magical thinking and it's like, oh, okay.
I don't have to worry about this.
I don't have to worry about it. I can figure this out. There's a reason and it's all good and I can move on and be happy and do other things and, you know.
Right.
So you can make sense of the world and move forward, so to speak.
Is it making sense or is it giving up responsibility?
It's both, because okay. It's not really making sense of the world. It's not based in truth or facts. It's in your own head, like,
oh, okay.
Okay, this makes sense now.
Like, okay.
Oh, Ziggy's got his toy right now because he likes to play, which is true, but that could be, I could say he has his toy because he's thinking about making a cake and that makes me happy. Right? Oh, I'm sorry.
It does not make him happy.
No. No. So the truth is less important than what works many times when we're in a place of magical thinking as a society, which is kind of where we are right now.
Yes, yes.
As far as our leaders go, it's really easy to lead a bunch of people who are going to be invested in magical thinking. So you think about the disenfranchised white Americans who have been told that, you know, they need to pull themselves up by their bootstraps and all this other stuff.
That foreigners are coming to take their jobs.
Well, that basically it's their responsibility.
Oh.
So, you know, we have a society that says, oh, no, you can, you know, no, you're the boss of your destiny. You're supposed to succeed. You're a white male. you should be successful.
Right.
And if that white male is not successful, that's really uncomfortable. It has to be reckoned with somehow. And it's a lot easier to say, well, I'm not successful because those foreigners came in and they took all the good jobs.
They took our jobs.
Rather than saying, oh, maybe I should have done X, Y, and Z. And maybe it is my fault. And maybe I was the one who created my own destiny. Does that make sense?
It. Yeah.
So you've got all these disenfranchised folks who don't.
You just called them disenfranchised.
Disenfranchised.
Go ahead.
With
sorry.
Their hamburgers. Disenfranchised folks who don't want to take responsibility for their plight in life or can't admit to other reasons like
white privilege, racism.
Right. Or so somebody's, you know, born into a community that just doesn't support things that will help them to better themselves, or they don't have the resources, they don't have the money. I mean, we can think about other people that way. Sometimes we don't think about white people that way because of white privilege.
Mm.
So, I'm sorry.
I get where you're going with this.
Does this make sense? So it's easier for them to make up a story rather than to own the truth, basically, one way or another, no matter how it works.
Right.
So and these people, if they are going to buy into a hierarchy, will look to whoever's on top to fix their problems. And if whoever's on top is going to tell them what they want to hear,
is a fucking liar,
then that person's got their support.
No matter what.
No matter what.
Even if they're wrong about everything and the worst human that could possibly ever have existed.
Right. And then we bounce back into pride. I can't admit that I'm wrong because that's not good to admit you're wrong.
So in your research, do you think that there is an intelligence piece of this? Do you know what I mean, though? Sometimes the people that I think of as having like so much pride that it harms their lives are just not smart enough to go, hey, wait a second. And I think that sometimes of people who are very religious, too, like they don't want to take responsibility for their lives. And I this could be wrong and it could be a prejudice that I have. I think that there's some intelligence missing there. And I could be wrong. It could be the way you were raised or
it's
circumstances.
So the podcast I was telling you about the other day called Red Brain, Blue Brain, it was an episode in Hidden Brain,
right?
NPR. In that episode, they talked about differences in brain function for these two people. They're hardwired differently. So
out of the chute. Okay.
And the political piece was kind of a byproduct. They were just trying to see how people functioned in the world. So, you know, you've got the type A's and the type B's and, you know, how people move in the world.
Right.
And they discovered that there are people who are more apt to hook into a hierarchical system rather than a more holistic idea of how the world works. Mm-hmm. So their idea of the way things are in the world is top to bottom. It's linear. Mm-hmm. The holistic folks see it more as a circle.
A big group.
Right. We're all together. So that might have something to do with it. You know, why religion resonates with some people and not with others. Why some people are more apt to look to people in power to fix their problems rather than fix their own or take responsibility for them.
Did they do brain scans of these people? I'm just wondering if the brains look differently, if they light up at different things.
I believe they did. They did. The study I'm thinking of is they gauged fear response.
Okay.
So they showed these people, you know, a whole bunch of different people. They showed them slides of just innocuous things, you know, a puppy, a tree, a teacup, whatever. And then they would show them something like a horrible car crash or a corpse. I mean, really frightening, disturbing things. Mm-hmm. The people who were more invested in the hierarchical system had a greater fear response to those things.
Really?
Yes, than the circle people. Let's call them the lines and the circles. So the holistic people had a lower fear response.
More confidence.
So, or more curiosity or interest. And they also, and I thought this was really, really interesting, they showed them slides of people. And so what they discovered is that when they saw people that looked most like themselves, there was less response. But when they saw people that looked very different from themselves, there was a bit of a fear response. And not so much with the circle people.
Wow.
So what they learned from that, and then they went back, you know, evolutionarily speaking, way, 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 way back when, an unknown person approaches your very small tribe.
Yeah.
And it's reason to be on alert. You know, what does this person want? Are they dangerous? Are they going to hurt us?
Right.
And in most cases back then, they probably were dangerous and did mean harm.
Right.
So that's kind of an evolutionary bit that has stuck in some people's brains, which
is very
interesting. And on that note, we used to live in societies that were small.
Yes.
Small groups of people. All of the people kept each other accountable. If I came and stole your corn stash...
Don't do it, Kimmy. Corn is one of the only things I can eat.
People are going to know, and they're going to rat me out, and I will be ostracized. I will be known as a thief within my small community that helps to keep me safe.
Right.
So people didn't do, you know, everybody was accountable. Like, I don't want to be ostracized. I'm not going to take your corn. Keep your corn. I might ask if I can borrow some of your corn.
Right.
Or, you know, can I have some? I'm kind of hungry. My corn sucks.
Say corn again.
My corn. My snap peas are good. You want some of those? Anyway, as societies became bigger and bigger and bigger and bigger and bigger, and people didn't know each other so much, they needed to devise a way to keep everybody on track. And that way was...
religion!
Yes, you win!
Woo!
So, religion showed up, and... so there's this God, and God is going to punish you. You take Cassie's corn, you're going to hell.
Damn straight.
Right? So all of these little rules were kind of enforced by this God, who was usually punitive, very punitive.
Yes.
And that's where the magical thinking starts to come in with religion. So this unseen force has power over the people.
You're talking about modern religion, because ancient religions already sort of had magical thinking about, like, spirits, like, earthly things, you
well,
know, pagans and things like
those
that.
Those were also smaller groups of people needed to have a reason. They needed a reason for natural events, catastrophic events, hurricanes and eclipses and
You're
all that kind of
stuff.
You're
talking about our modern...
Yes,
the
as we got
of
really
our
big.
Society.
So
got
as we
it.
Get really, really big, we need to have religion to keep everybody in line.
We all need to have a dad.
Right.
A strict dad.
Right.
Got
so
it.
It's back to that hierarchical thing. Somebody's got to be keeping an eye on everybody. So in a way, it was good because it did give people a framework to work together and not all kill each other and steal each other's corn and be dicks.
Got it.
But once people started to take control of the religion, it started to get kind of weird and crappy. So
you mean like they started fighting wars and killing each other over a few words in a book?
Right.
Okay.
And it became a way to manipulate the people. So you make rules and there's priests and only the priests can talk to God. And, you know, they did that in ancient Greece, you know.
Right.
So then then only certain people have the power. And then it starts to get punchy. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. And then the fighting begins and my God's better than your God and you guys are jerks and you just want my corn.
What did you discover? So, did you discover anything new about prayer?
I did not discover it. Well, I talked to my husband about it. My husband's a Christian. And we had a really meaningful discussion about prayer.
Good.
And it was really interesting. And he was of the mind that, yeah, people who pray for things, that's magical thinking. If you're going to pray for
I'm
a
glad
car,
he can make that distinction.
Oh, yeah. Well, it's kind of obvious. And he had Bible verses that backed up that idea, too.
Oh,
which
nice.
Was interesting. So, yeah, we had a really interesting discussion about praying for things and expecting things to come, as opposed to praying for, like, strength or guidance or just, you know, basically saying, I need some help.
Right.
Throw it at me, whatever it is. Just, I need some strength. I need some hope.
Right.
whereas people who pray for things, in Christianity's view, when you pray for a thing or an event to happen, you're basically saying, I know what I need better than God does.
Whoa.
Right? Isn't that interesting?
I mean, technically, yes, you do know what you need.
But
according to the Christian.
But according to the Christian ideal, it's kind of an insult. It's like, what the fuck is wrong with you?
I've never heard that before.
Yeah, I thought that was pretty interesting.
Wow.
So then I said, so Paul, what do you think the difference between prayer and meditation is? It's a similar act, right?
Yes.
Different disciplines.
Well, meditation is yourself.
Right.
And prayer is giving responsibility for your life to somebody else.
Mm-hmm.
A magical man in the sky.
Right. So then you kind of get into the Buddhist thing. And Buddhists, there's no God.
Mm-mm.
It's all very self-based. Mm-hmm. Like, this is how you need to behave. These are the truths. These are four truths, the eightfold path.
Right. Be cool. Take responsibility for yourself.
Don't be a dick.
Right.
Don't take Cassie's corn. And
I'm going to name this episode, Don't Take Cassie's Corn.
Don't take Cassie's corn. So when you meditate, you're taking responsibility with intention. And it's a self-based act. Like, I'm going to sit down here and I'm going to have some peace and I'm going to quiet my mind and I'm going to come out of this with a better brain space.
Right.
Whereas prayer is usually asking for an external entity to fulfill
a wish.
A wish. And there's you have no responsibility there.
And so if it doesn't happen, you could say, oh, it's God's will.
Right.
And if it does, praise be to God.
Right.
And you take no personal responsibility for the good things that you have accomplished or the bad things that you've done.
If you have the wherewithal to even try to accomplish them. Right.
Right. It bothers me when people that I know work very hard and then give God credit.
Yes.
Instead of knowing that they are a badass and they did that themselves.
Mm-hmm.
We had a conversation on our road trip this weekend. We went to the Grand Canyon.
It was so much fun.
With our friend Becky, who comes on the show sometimes, from time to time. And she is a staunch atheist. Doesn't mind if I tell you guys that.
Big time.
So we were talking over this idea of religion and magical thinking. And I had sort of come to the decision in my mind about Becky's atheism is that she's just super confident in her own judgment.
Yes.
She knows what she likes. She knows what she wants. She has very strong opinions. Mm-hmm. And she knows that she can get stuff done.
Yep.
And it's just this very black and white, no, I did that.
Exactly. Yeah.
And it was the first time I'd ever thought of it in that way, that someone who's an atheist is just sort of more confident in their abilities to lead a normal human life. Not to say that people who believe in God aren't capable and I don't know, confident, but I feel like Becky has that confidence. It's I don't know what I'm trying to say.
Well, she's very logical.
Right.
She's very much based in logic. You know, this, this, and this. So this.
Right. Ziggy's trying to make out with Kim right now.
Oh, Ziggy. Why does he like me so much tonight?
Because you bring him treats every time you come. Right. So Becky's very logical.
Becky is very logical. And she has a tremendous absence of fear, which is something I'm envious of right now as I battle fear.
You're working on it, though.
I'm working on it. It's getting better. But, you know, to her, it's like 1 + 2 = 3, and that's good enough, and I'm moving on. Like,
right.
This is how it works.
Right.
And it's awesome. Yeah, so the whole magical thinking and religion piece is really interesting, and Paul and I talked about that too, you know, just the different rituals and what does it mean and why, and is it just a means to control people, or how does it make one more pious, does it make one in the eyes of God?
I think if you work harder, it makes things more sacred, right? Like, if you just got together and said, everybody be a good person, go out on your way and think about God,
mm-hmm.
That doesn't make that religion very sacred. But if you're a Roman Catholic and somebody's swinging a censer around with incense in it and has giant golden robes on, and you're there for an hour and a half kneeling and standing up and kneeling and standing up and feeling
jump
a rosary,
down, turn around, pick a bale of cotton,
it feels like you've done something.
Right.
And that
you've participated.
You've participated in something sacred above yourself. And I think that's where those rituals come in.
Yeah. You've given your time and your effort, and then you can go home and be your wife.
You've put your time in.
But those things have been around forever and ever and ever. I mean, that's why we have Christmas trees.
Right.
The pagans said, you know, we really need to remember the light's going to come back. Let's get this tree in the house so as we're stuck in here all winter, we can see the tree and remember that there will be new life and new growth.
Right.
So, you know, who knows how that translates, those things translate through time and through people. Just little things to remember stuff by.
It'd be interesting to go into the future to see how much magical thinking is left. I feel like every time we see, you know, like a movie or a TV show and they hop into the future, things are very logical and scientific and
Spockian.
And I'm excited for that. I won't live to see it, but...
Well, then that raises the question, is magical thinking part of evolution?
Right. And that's what I'm wondering. Like, was there more magical thinking 1,000 years ago, 500 years ago? I'm inclined to say yes.
Is it something that is inspired by our circumstances also?
Possibly.
That was something else I thought of on the way over. Like, as far as religion goes... I was listening to a gospel song, and I was thinking of the slaves, the American slaves, mm-hmm. and they were typically very religious. They needed hope. They mm-hmm. needed to believe that there was
someone coming to save them,
that they were going to be saved, that there was a higher power that had their back because nobody else did except each other. So does our environment have any
effect
on that?
I'm sure.
Like now we've got, you know, our president just lies and lies and lies and tells wacky ass stories, and these people just eat it up. I don't get it. I mean,
you get it
now. I get it on paper, but it's but I still don't understand, like, how can you forsake the truth and facts?
Yep.
Just to feel better?
Yeah, people do a lot of things to feel better. They'll do heroin to feel better, knowing that it's probably going to kill them eventually.
Yeah, that's true.
Can't cope with this. I'm going to go eat this hot fudge sundae. I can't cope with this. I'm going to go do some heroin. I can't cope with this. I need to spend some money right now.
I'm going to go steal Cassie's corn.
I can't cope with this. I'm going to believe everything that Donald Trump says, because that's just easier than believing that the world is going to shit and we're not doing anything about it.
He's a rich guy and he's the president.
Oh, he's not a rich guy.
No.
Did you see?
I saw.
The New York Times today, they got a leaked cache of his financial records.
Oh, did they? Wait, I was thinking of something else that got leaked.
Tax information. The tax information from his 1040 forms for the past, since like 1985 or something.
Oh,
ridiculous.
Oh, interesting. It had to get leaked. It was just inevitable.
It was just a matter of time. In 10 years... time in a decade, mm-hmm. he lost over $1 billion.
Loser.
So he's not a billionaire, and the New York Times article said that he may have lost more money than any other individual American. So he is the best.
He's a winner at losing.
He's the best at losing. He's a loser.
Loser.
So your tarot card reading was correct.
Yes. Yeah, see, I brought them too.
Oh.
The tarot cards.
Let's pull one
thinking.
One card for Robert Mueller's testimony.
Oh, is he going to... What's going to happen with that?
I think it's May something. 15th?
May 15th. But May 15th. Somebody is saying no, he's not going to testify.
Oh, no, that's still Don McGahn. Don McGahn decided that he was going to go with the White House and not Congress, so he is refusing to testify. But Mueller is still an employee, basically, of the Department of Justice. In the next few days, he is going to not be so anymore and will be free to testify as a private American U.S. citizen.
Oh, good. I didn't realize that. I know that Barr pulled his "he's my employee" bullshit.
Right.
Barr shouldn't be the boss of anybody.
What's funny is that tarot cards are magical thinking.
Right. Exactly.
Hey, get off of her.
Ziggy had a moment of magical thinking. Your sack is empty, boy. I hate
you have an empty seed sack.
You've got an empty seed.
So we're going to participate in some magical thinking with the tarot cards.
Tarot cards.
And see if what's going to happen with Robert Mueller? I like saying Mueller, but I think it's...
Mueller. These are so big. They shouldn't make them so big.
You know, I met Ben Stein once when I was on his game show.
Oh, I forgot that you did that.
Win Ben Stein's money. Yeah. He stared at my boobs the whole time we were talking.
Wow, really?
Like, literally didn't even look up to my face.
Awesome. Yeah. Way to go, Ben.
Thanks. I was breastfeeding at the time, so they probably were spectacular, but it was really creepy.
Oh, Lordy. Oh, my goodness. Okay, so
How should we word this? For the soul of Robert Mueller, what's going to happen with the Mueller testimony?
What will the outcome of the Mueller testimony be?
Yes, the outcome.
What will the outcome of the Mueller testimony be?
On May 15th.
We're asking you, magic cards,
to help us with our magical thinking experiment.
Magical thinking.
Because last episode's magical thinking worked. Causality or coincidence?
Then there's the theory that we actually do create our own realities.
Right.
So
there's also the placebo effect. Mm-hmm. If we think something's true,
it may be so.
If we think something can help us, if these tarot cards are going to help us get through these next 2 weeks,
I'm so all about it. All right, Cass, pick a card, any card. Whoa. She's getting crazy.
It is the Seven of Coins.
Ooh, that's money. That's money, money card.
Money.
Pull up my cheat sheet here.
Money. Mueller.
Come on, Mullerman.
Mueller. Wait, that's a tongue twister.
Where's
Whoa, Nelly.
Mueller. Zig, you can't play with the iPad.
Mueller.
All right, we got Seven of Coins. Ooh. Effort, hard labor, reward, vision, profit, investment, reassessment.
Oh!
Nice.
This is good.
Effort, hard labor, reward, vision, profit, investment, reassessment. Dun, dun, dun.
Well, let's see how your magical thinking winning streak goes. We'll know on the 16th of May.
We'll see what happens.
So
let's ask him one more thing.
What?
What's Donald Trump going to tweet about tomorrow? What's the tweet storm going to be like tomorrow? Five of Wands. Let's see. Ziggy, you are one frisky little dude right now.
He loves you.
I love you too, Ziggy. Oh.
He's picking a tarot card.
He's picking cards. What was it? Five of Wands, right?
Wands.
Five of Wands is opposition, competition, conflict, aggression, and rivalry. He's going to come down on Diamond Joe.
What?
Yes, that's what it says.
Am I starting to believe in magical thinking? Could it be. Isn't so.
Could be. I mean, he's always tweeting about opposition, competition, conflict, aggression, and rivalry, though.
I know, but we talk about Mueller, and it's like hard work, reassessment, and then mm-hmm. Trump, and it's like, I'm a fucking douchebag.
Right? Mega douchebag. God, he's so horrible.
All right, ready? Puff the magic dragon, live by the sea, and frolicked in the autumn mist in a land called Honolly. Puff the magic dragon. I forgot the rest of the...
It's a sad song.
It's really sad.
My mom used to sing it to me when I was little.
I used to have it on a... Remember those stories you would buy and it would have a vinyl 45 in the back?
Yeah!
And you could read along with the vinyl.
Yep.
And then the other side had the songs on it.
Yeah.
I had Puff the Magic Dragon.
Aww.
I was going to say, we've had a ton of listeners from the UK lately.
Oh!
More than from the US.
Wow.
Almost every single
interesting.
Day.
Interesting.
So they're really, like, trying to get away from their Brexit woes.
Oh, my gosh. Did you read what I posted on Facebook
that
my cousin Astrid wrote?
Oh, no, I saw it. I wasn't online a lot today.
Oh, please
I'll go read it.
It's brilliant. This
She's
woman...
She's German, right?
She is German, and it's about identity, and it is freaking fascinating. It's so well thought out. It's just brilliant.
Does she decide in the end that... humanity is our identity?
She was more focused with just the Europe, the European, issues with the European Union. I think yesterday was it yesterday or day before voting day? It was yesterday. So,
he's very frisky right now.
Yeah, she is a, I love her so much. She's wicked smart and funny and kind and insightful and just all of the good things in the world wrapped up in Astrid Fostenwolf. She's, I believe she's in her mid-20s.
Oh, okay.
She,
so she's in it.
She's in it, and she is, last I heard, her goal was to become a diplomat.
That's fucking cool.
And, yeah, she's awesome. I love her. She's coming to visit, too.
Yay!
Yay, Astrid! I know you're not listening, but I can't wait to see you again.
The magic dragon lived by the sea and frolicked in the autumn mist in a land called Hanalei. Little Jackie Paper loved that rascal Puck and brought him strings and sealing wax and other fancy stuff. Oh, Puck, the magic dragon lived by the sea and frolicked in the autumn mist in a land called Hanalei. Jackie kept a lookout perched on Pup's gigantic